You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia. Yes, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And many of you will know that this city, Bogota, is a literary city. Well, Colombia is a literary country, really. And obviously, this is something close to my heart, having edited and worked on books and being a journalist by nature and trying to work on my own book, The Mompos Project. Those of you who follow my blog will know that's a work in progress for many years now, but things are coming ahead. So as I say, it's a literary city. So this is a literary episode. Episode of Columbia Calling, episode 208, and we're going to talk on the line to a Colombian author, editor, voyager, traveler, creative writer, who's down in Cordoba, Argentina at the moment, but he's bringing, I would say he's on a quest to bring poetry and contemporary poetry from South America to the masses, and his name is Eduardo Bechara, and we're very pleased to have him on the line from Cordoba. So welcome on the show, Eduardo.
Richard, thank you very much for inviting me.
You're most welcome. So now, Eduardo, let's talk a little bit about you to begin with here. You are a creative writer. You are a literary enthusiast. You live, work, breathe, sleep literature, poetry, and so on. How did you get into this? What is your background?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I tell my students when I've been a teacher. That, you know, literature, you have to, you know, wake up in the morning and breathe it, have a breakfast thinking about, you know, your own writing, you know, go through the morning working on your writing, have lunch working on, thinking about your writing, go through the afternoon working on it, and in the evening think about it, and when you're going to sleep also. So I think I used to be a lawyer, but my passion for writing was so huge and intense that I quitted my career as a lawyer, and then I went back to study literature in Universidad de los Andes over there in Colombia. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the United States, to Philadelphia, and did a master's of creative writing over there at Temple University. And then I became a teacher of creative writing and business writing over there. So as you say, you know, like, literature is something that you breathe at every moment, for somebody that's so passionate for it, right?
Well, I'm thrilled that you exited the legal world. I'm certain your parents weren't thrilled, but as you said, I want to take the route down through literature, and they'll go, I'm sure they asked you how you were going to pay for your next meal.
Yeah, of course. They were not very fond of my decision, but you know what's happened, that the most important decisions of my life, I've taken them, you know, in spite of the will of the people that love me. And I think that I always encourage people to, you know, follow their own route, mm-hmm. and not the one that other people want for you. You know, not even if it's the people that love you the most, because they want your security, your economical well-being, but you have to be passionate about things that really move you.
Yeah, of course.
So that's why Of course, paying my bills, it's very, very difficult. Even though now, you know, after, a decade and a half ago from making a little bit more, from making my decision of quitting law, but I do, you know, I'm very happy with who I am and what I'm doing, because I do actually what I want to do and do my trips and write my literature. And I think that that's more valuable than whatever money can give you if you're not really having, or if you're not really doing in your life what you feel passionate for.
This is true. It's not something that everyone can do, but at the same time, you followed this career path into law. You did what your parents wanted you to do, and you showed you could do it, and then from there on in, you've taken your own route. So I don't think, you know, they can't be so upset. You say, you know, you adhered to their authority for a certain amount of time and then said, listen, now it's my turn. It's my turn to continue, and this is what I'm going to do. Now, when did you, so tell me that about this. So you finished like the master's in creative writing, you started teaching in the U.S., when did you help set up or become an associate of the editorial Escarabajo?
Yeah. Well, to compliment your last remark. Yeah. No. That definitely. I think, you know, it's, you know, I would tell people, go ahead and you know, live your life in spite of whatever people say. And well, you know, my parents, I'm very grateful for what they've given me, for, you know, for who I am. And, you know, after some time, of course, that they disagreed or were not very fond of my decision, well, you know, they accepted it. And the most important thing is that, you know, I've been very passionate for my work. Mm-hmm. So I think that when you're very passionate for your work, other people see it, and they start supporting you in whatever quest that is that you want.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
Escarabajo Publishing House actually was founded in 2006 at Bogota when my sister Carolina, she's a graduate from pastry and French cuisine in Cordon Bleu in Paris. She wanted to publish a book. She had been working for several years in a book called Chantilly, which is makes fusion between French pastry and Colombian Latin American pastry. And I had my second novel to be published with, which is called Unos Duermen, Otros No. Mm-hmm. Some sleep, others don't. And, you know, instead of passing through the whole process of presenting the books to a, you know, big publishing house and waiting for a response, which in the 99% of the cases is a negative one. Well, we went ahead and we founded this this publishing house. We published her book, published mine, and after the years, I started publishing some other people, and well, it became a publishing house actually, with oriented to open, you know, the doors to young writers, poets, and narrators, who actually find those same doors closed in big publishing houses, which is not easy, and that's something that happens through the whole South America.
It's not just South America. I'm sure it's more restrictive here, but it's all over the world. I think I've sent 500 emails at least to, and letters and sample chapters, and I've had two positive responses. But then their positive responses saying, yes, we liked it, we enjoyed these chapters, they did make us laugh, it's an interesting story, but it's not for us.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just a struggle. But you know, this on this show on Columbia Calling, I've had authors on recently. A few weeks ago, we had Kelly Brooke Nichols, and she wrote a book. It's been published in Australia called "A Reluctant Warrior." And a few weeks before that, we had Julian Pacheco, who's the author of The Lucky Ones, and prior to that, Tom Feiling. You know, there are people who get them out there, but it's a tough market to be in. So you created this, and you've been publishing other authors who've been having difficulty, and it's been a success, because I see a number of books on the Escarabajo website. And one which particularly caught my eye was your crónicas, so your sort of, let's say, nonfiction tales, Mendaje por un Día, so like beggar for a day, beggar for a day?
Yeah, exactly. Mendigo por un Día, that's it.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, well, actually, I'm known in Colombia for writing travel chronicles. I started in 2007, when I did a trip through the whole Brazilian coast.
Nice.
In the fundraiser that wanted to collect some money for the kids, poor kids with cancer in Colombia. Mm. So I started writing for El Tiempo newspaper over there. Mm-hmm. They gave me a blog. So afterwards, when I went to Philly and I started writing some chronicles over there too, I wrote a chronicle that's called Mendigo por un Día, mm-hmm. like a one-day beggar. And you know, after some years, we collected some of the most interesting chronicles, mm-hmm. and we compilated them in the book. And actually, that book was launched in 2012 here in Córdoba, Argentina.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Okay. So it's very nice for me to be actually here, which is a place that I've been in the past, and I have a lot of friends here.
Yeah.
And the writers, which are very fond of myself. So it's a travel chronicle book that I'm very fond of, because it has chronicles in the Czech Republic and some other places in Europe and Central America. In South America and in North America.
And is this are you out there on the street begging, or is it something a little bit different?
Yeah, actually I did not something that's not new, which is going out like a beggar and asking for money, but well, it's my own experience and I wanted to live it, because when I lived in Center City, Philly, every day I saw a lot of beggars. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I started thinking about it, you know, like doing it like just for a day to know what it would feel, you know, like putting yourself in the shoes of a beggar, you know, not having even where to go or who to, you know, like the feeling that nobody in the world knows where you are or even cares. Mm. It's very heartbreaking. So,
absolutely.
It was very interesting, you know, like it's very hard even for a day. I mean, I can't even begin to feel what really feels to be a beggar or a bum, you know, like asking for money and not even knowing where to go in your day, you know. Like one of the most interesting things about that chronicle in particular is the way that you see other people. Mm. They're always determined. Everybody, you know, people always, they have a destination, you know, like going to their office, to their homes, to visit a friend or a girlfriend or son or whatever. But, you know, like when you see people walking in the street, they're always going somewhere.
Mm.
They have a destination where to go. And it's a big metaphor of, for a bum, you know, not having even, not even in a long term, but like in a short term destination. They don't even have where to go right now.
Yeah.
So at the moment, so it's very harsh. So it's very, very cruel.
Yeah, definitely. And did you, in doing this, I have to ask, because this is something that's very, it's very much close to my interests, not something that I've ever done, but I've read The People of the Abyss by Jack London and The Road to Wigan Pier by George Orwell, and I'm reading Sidewalk by Mitchell Dunier, who's a sociologist, and these are all, you know, chronicles of people on the street and having spent time and observing. But you've got this possibility of leaving, of course, which makes it somewhat different. But did you ever get, were you ever threatened by others who thought that you didn't belong there?
Well, actually, the thing, not really, because, I mean, 24 hours is not really enough time to really get a hold of it. Mm. But what most shocked me was that feeling. Mm. Of not having anywhere in the world to go or to, you know, or just knowing or trying to mimic in your own head the feeling of not having anybody that thinks about you.
Yeah.
So I think that was the most compelling theme. And the conclusion that I got from the experience, actually, the director of the creative writing program at Temple of the Masters was Samuel Delaney, which is one of the most important writers, the fiction writers, science fiction writers in English.
Yeah,
he wrote a novel that's called Delgreen, which has sold more than 3 million copies.
Wow.
Which is something, yeah.
Yeah.
Not least, you know. So he has some other very important novels as Abel 21 or some others. I mean, people can Google it.
Mm.
But it had a very interesting story of life. He was from Harlem, if I'm not wrong.
Mm.
And he had felt in love with actually a beggar in the street in New York.
Huh.
And he actually, you know, he paid for the life of the beggar because, you know, he took him out of the street. And this beggar would tell him, I mean, if you don't pay my life, I'll go back to the street. I mean, it's a place where I felt comfortable.
Yeah.
So, you know, it really depends. Really depends, you know. There are some people that feel comfortable in the street. It's their place. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a very difficult theme, actually. No.
Yeah.
It depends on every specific case. But actually, I've been writing a novel which is called "Zombies de Bogotá," which would be would translate as "Zombies from Bogotá."
Mm.
Which actually, when I was a creative writing teacher at Temple, you know, like I told my students that I didn't accept zombie writings, you know, because yeah, they many of them come to you with zombies or vampire tales, you know, which we've read so many of them that to be original writing something like this is very difficult. And this has nothing to do with zombies, but actually it has something, it has a lot to do with beggars and people that are left out in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, you know, there's a zone in Bogota, which is called La Calle El Cartucho, and another one that's called Bronx.
Yeah.
And beggars were, you know, expelled from that street, which was like beggar city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then all these people, which were expelled from that street, then they started, you know, walking the streets of Bogota, not knowing where to go, like, almost like shades, you know, like spirits. You know,
is this
Actually, that push, you know, that gave me the idea of writing a novel about a doctor that, you know, he's I don't know how do you say it in English. I forgot the word now. Gynecologist. Yeah, and you know, he's very well set, but then, you know, he's an alcoholic and he has a beautiful family, but at the end, you know, he he's left out in the street, and he lives there in that street in El Bronx in Bogota, and then he's expelled from there with the other beggars that were expelled. So it's a very beautiful novel. I haven't been able to write it, all of it, because and finish it, because I'm doing the project of In Busca de Poetas, yeah. In Search of Poets through the whole South America. But once I have some time to do it, I'm gonna try to finish it.
This is something that would be of great interest to me, because I'm writing my dissertation around the Estación de la Sabana, and of course what has taken place in the Bronx and what is taking place in Los Cinco Huecos and the Cartucho has affected it directly, and I find it very interesting. And I've spoken to community leaders, let's say, and from the Bronx and that area, and they say to me, no, we know Avianca pilots who've lost everything, who are down here, doctors and so on. So very much like the story that you are telling, it's a fascinating if distressing story. I will definitely read this novel when it's out, Eduardo. Let's.
Okay, that's fantastic. No,
one sale for me. Let's tell us. You just touched on the En Busca de Poetas. This is the big project you've been doing since for a few years now. I think it's this search for poets from the whole region of South America. Maybe you could tell us about this, because that's the reason you're down there in Cordoba. Well, I know you're doing another book on Patagonian poetry, but it's all together, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a project that's next February, it's going to be 5 years from the beginning. And let me tell you a little bit about the genesis of the project. I was actually with a fellow writer here in a town nearby, which is called Bianfunes. And we were talking about the little recognition that people give artists in general and poets in particular. And the idea came of how beautiful would it be to make a trip through the whole South America looking for poets, sitting down with them, telling them, okay, read me a poem, and this, what you do, is very important. That remained floating in the great world of idea, Plato's great world of ideas. After some time, I bring it down into a planned project, which I write very well, and I pass on to different corporations and enterprises in Colombia. There's one that's called Pavimentos Colombia, which said, look, this is very Quixotesque. But something very beautiful can come out from it. So they decided to sponsor. I had passed like a plan A, plan B. Plan A was traveling by myself. Mm-hmm. Plan B was traveling with somebody else. They said, look, plan B is impossible, but we're going to sponsor you with plan A. And from there on, we started the execution of the project, which meant flying from Bogota to Buenos Aires, Argentina. I met there with a fellow Colombian poet friend of mine, which is called Freddy Jesset. He told me, let's go and have a coffee with Viviana Mnur, which is a poet of Buenos Aires, but she knows very well like the poetic scene in South America, in Tierra del Fuego and Patagonia. Mm-hmm. So we went, and she told me, look, I'm going to put you in contact with Anaíla Zaroni in Ushuaia, Nini Bernardello in Rio Grande, Maki Corbalani in Neuquén, and so on and so forth. So I flew 3 hours from Buenos Aires to Ushuaia, which for those who doesn't know where it is, it's like the southest city in South America. Almost like from there you go to the South Pole. So I started working my way up from there, like Anaí, she told me, now that you're going to Rio Grande, apart from Nini Bernardello, you must see Julio El Mochilete, but be careful, he drinks 3 bottles of gin a day. And she told me, and it's true, you know, so be careful. So I called him, and then, you know, like he recommended me a young poet which had a publishing house and was publishing a young poet. So I traveled to, you know, from Ushuaia to Rio Grande. I met with him. He introduced me to Lucas Tolava, Priscila Bayones, some other young poets. We all went to this legendary poet's house, Julio Leite. He indeed, he drank his 3 bottles of gin a day. But, you know, his poetry was just fantastic, is fantastic.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening was that I, you know, went from one poet to the other, to the other, to the other, and, you know, this, the most recognized poets in Patagonia, and then they, you know, recommended me the unpublished poets, which have, you know, their poetry has been worked very well. So, you know, after some time in a city called Oro Rivadavia, someone told me, look, now that you're doing this, why are you leaving such very important places out of your schedule, which is south from Chile, which is like a place of really important poets, Uruguay, which is mainly a country of women poets, you know, in that same sense, why are you leaving out Paraguay, Bolivia, Venezuela out from it?
Mm.
From that, that's when I said, I've created a Frankenstein, you know, that's coming to pull my eyes out. But, you know, I'm a person that always finishes what he starts. So I said, okay, well, let's do another route here that passes through the nine Spanish speaking countries in South America. And almost after 5 years of project, I'm here in Cordoba, almost, you know, about to finish the north of Argentina after, you know, making a zigzag in Patagonia, doing Chile, the center of Argentina, Buenos Aires, Uruguay, a region that's called La Mesopotamia Argentina, which goes all the way to Paraguay, and, you know, like going down from Paraguay through bordering Rio Paraná, all the way to Rosario, and then I'm coming up. Next year, I plan to do Bolivia and Peru, and then Ecuador, and then I'm up in Colombia, which will be fantastic.
It must
to get over there after some years, you know.
Yeah, so. It must
and
be
what
so fascinating.
What's most important about the project is the collection of books that we're about to launch, with the first one, which is an anthology called Breve Tratado del Viento Sur, which would translate as Short Treatise of the South Wind, which is an anthology of poetry of the Patagonia, Argentina. So next year we'll try to publish an anthology of the south of Chile, afterwards the center of Chile, afterwards the center of Argentina, Buenos Aires, Uruguay. What we want to do is try to make a poetical atlas of contemporary poetry in South America.
It must be absolutely fascinating to see how this genre of poetry changes from region to region, country to country. There must be almost national traits.
Yeah, of course there are, and what most influences the poetry of each region, it's the landscape also, and, you know, the different influences that they've had, you know, the readings that they do, the older poets influence very much the younger ones. So there are very similar differences. Like, for example, in Patagonia, the poetry is filled up with wind. You can almost hear it in the music of the poetry, and the landscapes, you know, those vast landscapes which have no mountains. They're almost like the desert. That influences very much the poetry, you know, like the poet feels like lost in that landscape. Very different from Chile, for example, which has like a coastline of almost 2,000 miles. You know, like you can hear the ocean in their poetry, like the rhythm of the poetry. You can hear the waves, you know, coming to the beach, and so on and so forth. It's very interesting. But there's also a trace that, you know, that all of this Latin American poetry has, and that's a social theme, you know, that links all of it. Mm. They all speak, you know, of difficulties that a lot of people have here, and the ways, you know, things should be better. Mm. Right? They do it in a poetical way. Mm-hmm. You know, like, but it's a trace that unites the whole Latin American poetry.
Fascinating. Fascinating. So this is why, and I was checking out your websites and so on. Of course, if you want to check these out, that's www.enbuscadepoetas.com. I'll put that on the Facebook page and link to the Eduardo's Facebook page as well for this. But I saw a photo in the Café Brasileiro in Montevideo, and I've had coffee there, and I remember it so well. It's from over 10 years ago, sitting there going, God, this is a place I could sit down and write in. You know, it's something so atmospheric.
It's a very beautiful place. Yeah. Actually, most of my meetings with the poets were there.
Yeah.
Actually, it was an iconical place where one of the most important Argentinian Uruguayan writers went there, Eduardo Galeano. He used to go and drink coffee every day there. So, I mean, it was just a really beautiful and romantic place, you know, in Center City. Mm. So I assumed it as my office. When I like a place, like a coffee place like that, you know, like I tell the poets to go there. And the cafe becomes like an own character of the city and the place, you know. And one of the most interesting aspects of the project is that I write a travel blog, I think that many of the big stories are written in that book. Like, for example, a poet in Temuco called Juan Wenwan. He got into a fight with Ricardo Herrera. But Juan Wenwan was a black belt of karate, and he's a Mapuche, you know, from the native tribe Mapuche. So it's people that are very, actually very, how would I put it? They're, you know, they fought very very harshly against the Spaniards when they were being conquered. So they were both, you know, Juan Wenwan and Ricardo Herrera were fighting for who was the best poet of the city. So they ended up fighting, you know, punching themselves in front of us. And Ricardo Herrera, at the end, had no tooth. One of his tooth was gone.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Not their teeth.
It's one of the anecdotes of the trip. And there's many of them, you know, like also in Chile, in a place called Concon, which is near Viña del Mar and Valparaíso, we went into a poet guest house, which is called Claudio Bertoni. And he was an accumulator, you know, he accumulated trash, like empty bottles of olive oil or, you know, like worn tennis shoes that he had collected in the beach for years. Although, you know, he was a collector of garbage. It was very interesting, given though that he is the poet that sells the most in the whole Chile.
That's interesting.
Yeah. His poetry is very erotic. And actually, he's also a photographer. He has a very beautiful book. It's a book of naked girls, but in an artistical way. And, you know, like very glamorous. Mm. And it was a big contrast seeing, you know, his, the place he lived with, you know, with the glamour of his book.
Yeah.
So all those type of things you get to see when you embark on a project like this.
It's a project of a huge, huge scale. And unfortunately we don't have so much time to be able to delve into it all, but I understand that you're doing a crowdfunding campaign, which basically to you know, get this book out there. It's on Indiegogo. There's about 20 days left. I think you'll make your target income there. I think you can do it. There must be interest around this because it's such an interesting project.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we've been for 15 years already, 15 days into the campaign. The campaign is called Campaña de Financiación Colectiva Breve Tratado del Viento Sur, which is like campaign for the publication of the short treatise of the South Wind.
Mm.
And I mean, we need all the help that we can get. You know, like if you're interested in poetry, if you like the project, you want to give us a hand so that we can publish this book and then publish next year the one from south of Chile and the other one, the center of Chile, and, you know, do the whole collection of anthologies that we want to publish, well, we would be very, very, you know, grateful for, you know, all the help we can get. And, well, it's up there, you know, like... you can find it. And the interesting thing is that we are already talking with some poets from North America to see the possibility of translating into English the anthologies.
Wow.
So they would be initially published in Spanish, and then we would work to publish them in English. It's a very humongous project. But the beautiful thing about it, Richard, is that, you know, like we've done at least like 60% of the search in the continent, which means that 45% or 40% that's left can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And we are starting to publish the anthology, which means that that can be done too.
Excellent.
So it's very ambitious. It's very ambitious, but that's why we need people to help us. You know, like raise this funds that we need to publish the book initially in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
so that it, you know, it can strength so that the project starts showing it, you know, the first real results of the search. And I'm sure that that's going to strengthen us towards, you know, the next anthologies that are coming, and towards getting, you know, the funding needed to conclude a project as like this, of this magnitude.
So yeah, well, you know, we wish you all the best. It sounds incredible. It sounds tiring. It sounds emotionally draining, but enriching at the same time. If you have a few dollars spare here or there, check out the Breve Tratado del Viento Sur. on Indiegogo, or just check on our Facebook page, because we will link to the Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign. It would be amazing if it were to be translated into English, just to open a new, new host of poets to the Anglo world. Of course, something is lost in translation, but at the same time, just getting it out there is a huge deal. Let me just take this moment to say thank you to Eduardo Bechara, author, writer, dreamer, itinerant wanderer, editor, poet, everything. Thank you for being on the show.
No, Richard, thank you very much for inviting me and for your time. And you know, people that want to take a look at our Indiegogo campaign, it's in English too. Mm-hmm. So can really get a grab of what the project is about in the Indiegogo page. So thank you really very much. You know, like I'm looking forward to meeting you in person once I go back to Bogota. So
if the winds don't take you elsewhere on another literary project, I fear that might well be the case. But it's been a real pleasure. This has been episode 208 of Colombia Calling with Eduardo Bechara, who's down in Córdoba, Argentina at the moment. So that's a literary show, literary episode for those of you out there listening. Thank you so much for your continued support week in, week out, tuning into this little garage run Colombia Calling podcast. We'll be back next week with further interesting stories around Colombia and the world, but with a Colombian element to them. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Thank you for listening. Bye bye.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.